Desert Island Discs. Each week, a well-known person is asked the question, if you were to be cast away alone on a desert island, which 8 gramophone records would you choose to have with you? As usual, the castaway is introduced by Roy Plumley.
How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? Our castaway this week is the possessor of a very well-known voice, but it's one that we usually hear much earlier in the day. It's Jack DeMagne. Jack, do you think you could face up to solitude?
I'd have to face up to it, but I wouldn't be very good at it because I'm a very gregarious person.
What would you be happiest to have got away from?
Initially, I think this awful strain and rush that one goes through every day of earning one's living.
Are you anything of a musician? Do you play an instrument?
No, I'm absolutely useless, but oddly enough, I won a music prize.
You're a prize winner?
Oh, yes, I won a prize at my prep school, simply because they wanted me to play the piano in a concert, and I practiced so hard. In actual fact, what I was doing was making a noise to keep the people impressed to show that I was at the piano, and I made such a mess of it that they couldn't put me in the concert, so they thought they'd give me the prize.
Mm-hmm.
That was very sweet of them.
Yes, I feel very honoured to be here with you with a prize winner.
Well, they gave me a book of Wagner's operas. I immediately gave it away because I can't stand Wagner.
Do you play records much at home?
Yes, quite a lot.
What would you expect your 8 chosen records to do for you on the island? Evoke the past, cheer you up, inspire you? What?
Well, I think it'd be a mixture. I think I'd like them to bring back a lot of sort of happy memories. And I'd like one or two, or one anyway, to make me laugh.
Mm.
And I think at the moment of being shipwrecked, I'd like to sort of have a with it one, you know.
Well, what's the first one?
Well, the first one is a great favourite of mine, a man I used to go and see when I was in the States before the war, Louis Armstrong. And he did this tour a few years ago, you know, great success he had with it. And he made a record, which he heard a tune in Germany called The Faithful Hussar. He can't pronounce it, he calls it Huzza Cuzza.
Oh,
Louis Armstrong and his all-stars, The Faithful Hussar. Jack, what's your second choice?
Well, I think I have something entirely different, something by Mr. Mozart.
Mm.
Well, let's start with the beginning of Ein kleiner Nachtmusik. I gather I'm not allowed the whole thing, so we have to fade it where you beastly people decide.
All right, why do you choose this?
Well, when I came out of the army at the end of the war, I hadn't got any money, and I was working for the BBC, and I suddenly bought a radiogram for £5, which worked for a while. And we only had, I think, 3 records, and they were in a box which stood up, and they were all warped. And the only one I liked was this one, and it will always evoke very pleasant memories, because I played it the whole time. It's the only record I had.
The opening of Mozart's Eine kleine Nachtmusik, the Bath Festival Chamber Orchestra. Jack, are you a Londoner?
I am, yes. I was born in London.
DeMagne isn't an English name, obviously.
No, my father was an Italian.
Were you brought up to speak Italian?
Not one word. No, my father was killed very early on, and I never had it around the house, and I'm not very good at it. I can understand a little.
Yeah. I've yet to meet the professional broadcaster who had a childhood ambition to become one. What did you want to be?
Well, oddly enough, I wanted to be a soldier. That's one thing. I suppose the wrong reasons, because I liked the uniforms. And...
What did you do when you left school?
I went to a brewery. Mm. And worked there for a while. I wasn't very good at it. I was in a sort of Dickensian counting house, and my job was to sort of send off invoices to the publicans and stick on the stamps. And I couldn't even stick those on properly. They used to come off. And a publican rang up and sort of said, "Barnes here, Eagle Clifton Road, got my bill this morning. It was wrong, and no stamp on it," because they got a bit fed up with this. And they asked me to leave.
Really?
Very politely.
Mm-hmm. What was the next move?
Well, then I thought I'd try the army, and it was a bit late, so I thought I'd try through the sort of territorials and get in that way.
Mm. Successfully?
No, not really, because I didn't really like it very much, because I think one required a certain amount of money, and I hadn't got it then.
Mm-hmm. So what did you do?
Well, then I went into the hotel business, starting at the bottom, as you have to do.
Yes. Right through the kitchens?
Well, not right through, for various departments. I was a fishmonger for a long time, which is a very smelly job, because you can never get those beastly herring scales off you. Even if you have a Turkish bath, and your friends sort of sniff when you see them.
Waiting as well?
Yes, I was a floor waiter. That was great fun. Mm-hmm. And I was a waiter down in the south of France in a restaurant in Cannes.
Were you a good waiter?
I think I was a jolly good waiter. I poured some hot sauce once down one of the King of Sweden's guests, which didn't endear me to the management. But apart from that, I think I was pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Then what happened?
Well, then I came back from France, and I got married to an American and went over to the States and lived there for a while.
Yes.
I worked on a farm there. I wasn't really supposed to work because I hadn't got the right sort of visa, but it was a family farm, so it was quite all right.
Well, having been in the army, you were on the reserve and were called up in 1939. And I know you served in France and right through the North African campaign. You were awarded the MC and Bar, and you were wounded a couple of times, I believe, in North Africa.
No, I was only wounded once really badly. The other time wasn't really serious.
Then you volunteered for Forces Broadcasting.
Yes, a friend of mine, who was also in my regiment, and he was at school with me, was, I think, one of the first of the sort of Forces Broadcasting people ever, because they didn't have a... they had a thing called FBU, Forces Broadcasting Unit, and he ran a little tiny station with a sergeant in Beirut. And then they thought of this as a serious project, and a man called Dickie Mayer, Radio Normandy, I think it was.
Yes, indeed.
Came out to organise it, and he gave me a job on the very first station in Palestine, which was enormous fun.
Mm-hmm. Well, there you are in broadcasting, so at this point, let's break off for record number three. What next?
Well, something that takes me back to those days in New York. I used to go and watch Fats Waller play early in the morning. We used to come along and play just for the sheer joy of it, the club I used to go to. So let's listen to him playing I'm Crazy But a Baby.
Oh, we're now floating down to Hudson, Mercy. Oh, you slimy, you sweet thing. Oh, baby. Oh, I'm the world's most happy creature. Tell me what can worry be. I'm crazy about my baby, and my baby's crazy about me. Oh, Mr. Cupid was the teacher. Oh, the reason we agree. I'm so crazy about my baby. My baby's crazy about me. Pop, get that book out. Get that book out and hold it steady. Hold it steady in your hand. Keep a steady lookout. Surely you can understand. It's an A1 combination. A perfect he and she. I'm crazy about my baby, and my baby's crazy about me.
Fats Waller. Well, Jack, you were in Forces Broadcasting at the end of the war. What did you do when you were demobilized?
Well, before I left Forces Broadcasting, when I knew I was coming out, I went along to see John Davenport, who was in Cairo as the BBC representative, and I asked him if he'd give me some letters of introduction, and he very kindly did. He gave me a whole pile of them. And the first person I called on was a delightful man called Charles Max Muller, who's head of OBs today inside. And he gave me a job on the General Overseas Service because he was then head of overseas.
Yes. A job as what?
As an announcer.
Yes. On the overseas service, things were much more free and easy than they were on the domestic services, I believe.
Well, I wouldn't know about the domestic services then, but it was the most free and easy and friendly place to work. It was marvellous. But I think coming out of the army, one is slightly irresponsible because, you know, the war going on, you can rarely sort of get in gear.
The overseas service, of course, meant working all sorts of hours.
Well, of course, yes, we used to then have a 24-hour service. I think it's still 23. And it was working right through the night on every sort of service in North America, Far East.
Then you transferred to the Home Service.
Yes, I enjoyed that enormously, but I wasn't a newsreader when I first joined them. I just announced in continuity in every type of programme, but except the news, because they had special newsreaders then.
Yes. Well, then today started, and you were given that job. Why do you think you were elected to that?
I can't imagine, really, because it's the one programme I wanted to do, and when I heard it was coming on, I thought, this is absolutely a super idea. They gave it to a jolly good chap, Alan Skempton, and then a series of people tried it afterwards. And eventually I got a telegram when I was on holiday saying, would you like to do today?
And with only an occasional break, you'll be doing it ever since.
Yes, absolutely love it.
Well, more about today in a minute. In the meantime, another record. What?
Well, obviously on this island, one's got to laugh a bit from time to time, and I must have a record to make me do that. So what about The Last to Go by Mr. Kenneth Williams?
Yes. It was evening news was the last to go tonight.
Not always the last, though, is it?
No, of course. Oh, sometimes it's the news. Sometimes one of the others. There's no way of telling beforehand, like. Not till you just got your last one left, of course. Then you can tell what one it's going to be.
Yes.
Kenneth Williams and Peter Reeves in Harold Pinter's sketch The Last to Go from Pieces of Eight. Well, now, Jack, today is broadcast twice, the first time at 7:15. What time do you have to get up?
Well, they call me at 5:45, and they send a car for me, the BBC do, at about 6:15.
And when you finish at 9:15, you can't go back to bed. You have to go around and do some of the interviewing, for example.
Well, I have to do that. I usually go to a meeting, or not always, and about the programme for the next day, and then, you know, one's involved in other activities.
Yes. I believe you took a day trip as far as Miami to get one interview.
Yes, that was a good idea by a press officer and an airline. He rang up and said, I heard you say this morning that you knew of a porpoise that jumped 16 feet, and that was a world record. Well, it's quite wrong. And he said he knew of a porpoise that jumped 21 feet 5 times a day, every day of its life. Would I like to meet it? And I said, well, I'd be absolutely delighted to meet it. He said, well, it's in Miami. I said, well, if we're going to do this, what we must do is do it over a weekend, because I've got to be back on Monday. And on a Friday, I'll say, right, I'm off to Miami for the weekend, rather smartly, and do join me on Monday. I'm going to interview a porpoise. Well, off I went, and we left late, 2:00 on Saturday, flew to Miami, and they had a helicopter laid on because we were late, and flew me to the aquarium. And when we got there, because the tropics, it gets dark pretty quickly, the porpoises weren't performing at all well, and my recording machine got broken en route. So I really didn't get a recording at all. And I was absolutely desperate. I said to the managing director, for heaven's sake, you must have some recordings. And he gave me a couple of tapes. And I got in a police car and was whizzed at 90 miles an hour back to the airfield, and got on the plane and came back to London at 1:00 on the Sunday. I spent the whole of that night in broadcasting. I was trying to cut up this tape and get the American out of it, so I'd have something for the Monday morning. I needn't have gone at all. They could have put it in the post.
Looking back on 6.5 years of today, all those hundreds of celebrities and centenarians and eccentrics, whom do you remember?
Well, that's a frightfully difficult thing, because I never remember anybody except, of course, Ruth Drew, who I'll always remember, who's one of our contributors, a marvellous woman.
Yes.
And old Mrs. Nicholas, who's dead. She died when she was 109. It was absolutely fascinating talking about her childhood.
Right. Then there was that unfortunate time that the dog ate your teeth.
Yes, that was very embarrassing. I just made horrid splashing noises in the morning.
Jack, have you any one big ambition professionally?
No, not really. I just want to go on being able to earn my living and die comfortably and leave enough for my wife to do the same.
Let's have record number 5.
Well, I think we have something by Mr. Sinatra, an arrangement by Nelson Riddle of an old number. I'm Irresponsible.
Call me irresponsible. Yes, I'm unreliable.
irresponsibly mad for you.
Frank Sinatra. And what next?
Well, I think I'd like something from My Fair Lady, because a lot of my friends, sort of intellectual chaps, always scoff at the show. I thought it was absolutely marvellous, a beautiful show, and Julie Andrews sends tingles up my spine when she sings I Could Have Danced All Night.
I could have danced all night, I could have danced all night, and still have begged for more. I could have spread my wings and done a thousand things I've never done before. I'll never know what made it so.
Julie Andrews. Jack, how good a castaway would you be? An hotelier should know something about making himself comfortable.
Well, I think I'd be quite good at it, but I wouldn't be very good at being lonely. I'm not very good at cooking for myself. I like having people around me when I cook, so I might be able to catch the odd fish and grill it on a bit of fire.
Have you done any fishing?
Yes, I'm very keen, but I'm very bad, so I'd have to wait a long time. I'd probably starve.
What are your other hobbies?
Well, I don't have time for it now. I try and paint, but I'm not very good at that either.
Mm. Carpentry? Anything of that sort?
No, I'm useless.
Could you make a craft, a raft or something of that sort?
Well, it'd be a very dicey one if I did. I'd try, I think, yes.
Would you try to escape?
I'd think about it, and I think I'd probably decide not to, because I'm sure to get lost. I mean, I was hopeless in the army when I had to find my way. Even with maps, the colonel would say, where are we, Domania? And I'd make a great circle on the map, about there, sir. And he always asked me, but I was always wrong.
Yes, better stay where you are. Let's have record number 7.
Well, I think we've got to be with it a bit on this island, and there's one little trio I like very much, the Supremes. And I like their first record, best of all, Where Did Our Love Go?
Supremes, and they bring us to your last choice, which is what?
Well, I'd like something from the Rhapsody on a Theme by Paganini. And the reason for this is, I think it was after the war, I was lucky enough to be invited to Covent Garden for the opening. And they did a ballet on this theme. And apart from that, I can't even remember who was in it or anything very much about it, but it was such a marvellous night, really, seeing people again looking elegant and gay, and the women looking beautiful. And, of course, I think Covent Garden, when it's full of people, is the most romantic place in the world. And I think I'd have that just to bring back that memory.
One of the variations from Rachmaninoff's Rhapsody on the Theme of Paganini, Julius Katchen with the London Philharmonic Orchestra. If you could only take one of the 8 records you played us, Jack, which one would it be?
Well, I think I'd take Mr. Armstrong with Huzzah, because I played that record at home about 25 times running and driven everybody potty.
Right, and one luxury to take with you.
Well, I think I'd take a... could I take a shotgun with 25... a lot of cartridges?
What?
No, of course
you've
got
a wound.
Yes, this is not a luxury. Shotgun and cartridges.
Well, I call that luxury. Well, what about... Well, the birds would be pretty safe. What about a billy pistol, so I could be rescued?
No, 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 no. No pistols at all. No pistols, no cartridges, no guns.
I think you're beastly. Well, then, I'd like some very nice, very expensive, and a great deal of it, scented soap.
Of course, as much as you like.
Marvellous.
All colours, all perfumes.
That's wonderful.
Right, and one book, apart from the Bible and Shakespeare.
Well, there's a book I've read 3 times, and I can go on reading it again, because I never remember who's in it. War and Peace.
Mm-hmm.
And that would keep me going, because once I finish, I start again.
All right, and you're not to use that soap for cooking.
No.
And thank you, Jack DiMaggio, for letting us hear your choice of Desert Island Disc.
And Roy Plumley, thank you very much indeed for having me.
Goodbye, everyone.
The guest in today's recorded program was Jack DiMaggio. The interviewer was Roy Plumley, and the producer, Monica Chapman. Next Monday at 1:10, the castaway will be the actor John Clements.